And with this in mind, you and I can finally understand something I think that's very interesting. And that is that you and I can finally understand the difference between a macho man and a real man. Based upon what we've just learned. This is a real man. What I've just described to you. Now let me show you the difference between a macho man and a real man. Let me ask. I want to ask about a baby. Is a baby self-centered? Yes. Is a baby selfish, caring all about himself all the time? Sure. Is a baby impatient? Yes. Is a baby willing to be destructive to get what he wants? Yes. Does a baby use things, and when they're no longer interesting, throw them away? Yes. Now let me ask you about a macho man. Is a macho man self-centered? Yes. Is a macho man selfish? Yes. Is a macho man impatient? I want what I want when I want it. Yes. Is a macho man destructive? Well, knocking down doors, bashing people around, and things like that? Sure. Does a macho man use things, particularly people, particularly women, and when they're no longer interesting, throw them away? Yes. Bottom line then, no joke intended whatsoever, what is a macho man? Nothing but an overgrown baby. That's all. I mean, literally, that's what a macho man is. It's an adult baby. Now, is a macho man exciting? I would propose a macho man is exciting. Got that. But after 5 years, do you have anything left in a macho man's life? You got nothing left. All right, he's exciting. Got that. And I'm talking about the John Wayne image in Rambo. I'm talking about John Wayne. I don't know him at all. I didn't know him at all. But the John Wayne image in Rambo, that's what I'm saying. It's just nothing but an adult baby. I don't think it's so pretty when you begin to look at it that way. Let's look at a real man. This is a real man. Is a real man self-centered from what we've been seeing? No. Is a real man selfish? Always thinking about his own self. No. Is a real man impatient? No. What time schedule have we been looking at for the last 2 days? Years. Not weeks. Years. is a real man destructive? Willing to be destructive? No, he's constantly building. Is a real man use things, particularly people, and throw them away when he's no longer interested? No, he's constantly building up people. Gentlemen, bottom line, which is the better man? Macho man or the real man? Real man. And also, bottom line, catch this. Which one takes the most guts? Isn't this ironic? It's this guy right here. Not this one. This takes strength. Macho man. The real man takes guts to hang in for 10, 12, 15 years serving miserable people and enduring humiliation and abuse for what's right. But gentlemen, that's real precious. And I just want to mention one last thing. Guess what? Very few men can be a macho man. I haven't seen anybody here yet in this room who can be a macho man, because it takes raw physical strength. Very few men can be a macho man. However, guess how many men can be a real man? Guess what percent of the men sitting in this room right now can be a real man if they choose? 100%. Any man in here can be a real man if you choose. Isn't that amazing? All you have to do is decide you want in. Every man can be a real man.
This is the end of this message. The next message will continue immediately on this tape.
Okay, let's go ahead then and look on page 20. Let me ask, how many of you feel that what we saw last hour looked like it's just too much? Let's be honest. How many of you crossed your mind? It sounds like it's too much. Well, guess what? I think it is. We're asking basically on that page, I think, to give up everything that you are to cause another person to be able to make it. And so I think the normal thing a human has to ask is, what's in it for me? Why should I do that? I think that's normal and healthy. I do not think God is bothered at all if you ask that particular question. And he has an answer. He has an answer of why you should give up everything that you are for your wife. And we'll look at that on that page. And I think you'll be surprised. And that is that a wife is the measure of a man's true godliness. A wife is the measure of a man's true godliness. Let's see what that means. I only want to look at two things on that page. Number one, we need to begin to see the marriage is what kind of adventure. We've been seeing it, not as a joint, we've been seeing it mostly, I think, as a physical adventure, a companion and a cook, perhaps. But what have we been seeing now? It's what kind of adventure? I propose it is a very spiritual adventure. If you are in a marriage, you are in a spiritual arena. You need to realize that what happens in your marriage has spiritual dimensions and spiritual consequences for eternity. Also, it's very important, you need to realize that your wife is a gift or responsibility that has been done what to you by God? Give me the wrong answer first, please.
Given.
Thank you. That's the wrong answer. No, she hasn't been given to you. That's okay. I mean, this is what we think. Give me the next wrong answer. She hasn't been given to you. She has been what? Now, loaned normally comes up next. We back off a little bit. No, she hasn't been loaned to you. She hasn't been given to you. She hasn't been loaned to you. She's never going to be given to you. Title has never transferred on that wife to you. Who does the wife belong to?
Father.
She belongs directly to God. And she has never been given to you, and she's never going to be given to you. She has been what? She has been entrusted to you. Gentlemen, if you are married, that woman's soul belongs directly to God. He has kept title. He has never given you title, and he's never going to. She has been entrusted to your care, and he will hold you personally accountable on what you've done with his precious person. Wow, I think it's pretty important for us to realize. No, she's not yours in any way. She is your responsibility and a gift that's been entrusted to your care. Okay, with that in mind then, I want to look at one last verse. And that is in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. I want to look at an important verse about the woman being the measure of a man's godliness. Chapter 11, verse 7 says, "For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man." Okay, what does that verse say about the male? What does it say the man is? It says, first of all, that he is the image of God. What's the next thing it says? No, the man, about the man. What does it say about him? It also happens to specifically say that he is the glory of God. Okay, now, when we look to the woman, the verse also says something. What does it say about her being the image of God? Nothing. What does it say about her being the glory of God? Nothing. What does it say that she is? She is the glory of the man. Now, when most people look at this verse, they say, well, it means the woman is the image of God and the glory of God too. Well, I think if it had meant it, guess what I think it would have done? I think it would have said it. I think it means exactly what it says. And what I propose is that we now figure out what is it saying and what does it mean. Okay? First of all, before we can figure out what this verse means, we need to define a couple of things. We need to define image and we need to define glory. Because remember, I've made a big deal out of the image of God being plural, haven't I? And all of a sudden now, the male by himself is being called the image of God. How can that be? There's no problem. Because if you are making something and you have the whole or the source that you have to add the parts to get the product, the whole or the source can be called by the name of the whole product, even before it's complete. That's not hard to see. Let me give you an illustration. If you and I are working on a car here in a garage, and there's an engine block and a camshaft over there in the corner, if I asked you to go get me the motor, what will you go get me every single time? You go get me the block. Is it a motor? It's not a motor. Can it ever run a car? An engine block? No, I can't do that. But it is the what? It's the whole or the source that you add the parts to. And so we don't think a thing about it. That's the whole. We can call it by the name of being the motor. Do you understand what I'm saying? With the image of God, the male is the what? He's the whole or the source that you add the parts to, the woman to get the whole image. And so God can call us the image of God all by ourselves, even though we are not by ourselves. All right? So that's how the male can be called the image of God. Now, the second thing that we need to see is what glory is. And this is kind of exciting. The definition of glory is extremely simple. I got it from a professor many years ago. It is excellence displayed. That is glory. Simple definition. We need to define excellence now. Excellence is something that you can be justifiably proud of. Correctly proud of. That is anything that is excellent is something you can be correctly proud of. All right? Now, let me show you how that works out. Walter Payton, is he a good football player? Is Walter Payton a good football player? Yes. Is he an excellent football player? Yes. Now, when Walter Payton gets that ball and hits that line and hits the hole and then cuts this way and bounces off somebody over this way and then bounces back, spins this way, stiff arms another guy, leaps over another guy, and cuts on down the field, is that good playing? Yes. Is it excellent playing? Yes. Therefore, if it's excellent playing, when he displays it, when he shows it on the field, it becomes his what? By this definition. It becomes his glory. Can he be correctly proud of his running? Yes, he can. It's good running. I mean, he could look at the tapes of the running, and he could say, hey, man, that's fantastic running, couldn't he? Now, we would have a problem with that, wouldn't we? We'd say, well, he's not very modest. But you see, we have a problem. What's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to look at his running and say, well, that's the best I could do. I'll try and do better next week. We think that's correct modesty. That's rather dumb, actually. I mean, it's great running. You understand what I'm saying? It's just because it's him, it doesn't change anything. He can be correctly proud of it. God does the same thing. God says, look at the heavens. The heavens display what? The glory of who I am. Does he say, well, that's the best I could do this time? I'll try and, you know, get it up next time. That's what we think is correct modesty. That's foolishness. God says, that's fantastic. He also says that my glory is also my compassion, my kindness, my patience, and on and on. You understand? Do you understand that God is proud of himself? I don't know. Maybe you haven't thought about it. He's proud of himself. He's correctly proud of himself. Because that which is excellent, you can be proud of. Okay. Well, what it's saying then is that the man is the glory of God. He displays the excellence of who God is, and the woman is the glory of the man. She displays the excellence of who God is. You can be justifiably proud of that. Okay. Let's see what that means. I'm going to propose what that verse is saying is that your wife, figuratively, has been designed by God to be a flower, a precious, beautiful flower. She has been given God's choicest characteristics. Remember from the first night? His highest characteristics have been bestowed upon the female. And God desires your wife to blossom and just become beautiful in this world and display his characteristics. And when she does that, it's a very precious thing. She is displaying his glory. Now, as a flower, what dirt has she been planted in? As a flower, your wife has been planted in which dirt? You, gentlemen, remember? We're little dirt men from the first night. Yeah, you are the soil. We better change the word to soil, though. She has been planted in you. And that's very important. Yes, you and I are of the earth. We are dirt. And your wife has been planted in you. Now, that's very important. If your wife begins to blossom and radiate, what does she display about the quality of your soil? It's rich. If she wilts and begins to shrivel, what does she display about the quality of your soil? It's very poor. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let's see how that works out. Let's say we're going somewhere, traveling in the summer, and we pass by cornfields. If we're passing by and all of a sudden see one cornfield that is appreciably better than any of the others, where the stalks are higher, where the ears are richer and everything, what do we say? The first thing we say, wow, fantastic corn. What's the next thing we almost always say? Must be good soil. And that's true. You can't raise good corn out of bad soil, can you? Gentlemen, that's what's happening. Your wife has been planted in you as soil. If your wife begins to blossom and radiate, she displays the quality of your soil. If she shrivels and withers, then she displays the poorness of your soil. She displays, she's the true measure of your godliness. Let me show you how that works out. In my life, I have the opportunity, I have more opportunities to go listen to big-time speakers than I have time to go listen. I have too many opportunities, so I don't have time to go to hear them all. So I've had to make a way of deciding which ones I want to go listen to. And based upon this, I found a way that has served me well. And that is, I don't bother going talking to the speaker before the time. He's normally crowded around with other people. Guess who I go look for? I go look for his wife. Gentlemen, if I find a woman who's dull-eyed, whose face is fallen, who does not have an excitement or enthusiasm for life, guess what? I have other things to do that day. I don't need to listen to that man. Am I saying that he doesn't know anything? No, I'm not saying that at all. He may have a lot of knowledge. However, mixed with his knowledge will be what? Error. You see, I've just found out about the quality of the man. And it's not good. Now, if I go find a wife who's bright-eyed, whose face is alert, she doesn't have to be outspoken. You understand? She could be a quiet woman. But there's an excitement and an enthusiasm for life. Gentlemen, I don't walk to the front row. Guess what I do? I run to the front row. I want to listen to this man. I don't care about his quality of teaching. Do you understand? I don't care about his technique. I just found out about the man. What if I just found out about him? He's a quality man. I want to learn from him. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's pure. Gentlemen, that's what your wife is saying about you to this world. This is why you can afford to lavish your attention on your wife. You can lavish your care. Because as the years roll by, if your wife becomes to radiate and become a beautiful person, what does that say about you? Displays about who you are before God. That is the true measure of your godliness. I don't need to hear from you how many verses you have memorized. I do not need to hear from you about your ministries that you are doing. I do not need to hear from you what you are doing in your church. It all means zero. You know what I need to see from you to evaluate where you are with God? I want to meet your wife. You can't fake it there, gentlemen. You understand? None of us can fake it. Your wife is your measure. Do you see what we're talking about, gentlemen? That's why you can lavish your attention on your wife. If she radiates and becomes somebody, it just displays who you are. And it's a true display. You understand? So you can do it over the years. On the bottom of your page, it says something like, for a man to, give up his desires or whatever the case may be just to benefit another one. Oh, no, what does it say?
Transformed by the Spirit.
Oh, when a man is transformed by the Spirit of God, then the angels display the glory of whom? In the man. Or the power of whom? God, and they give glory to whom? To God. When a woman is transformed in marriage, when a woman in marriage is transformed toward godliness, the angels display the glory of who in the woman, or something like that? The man, and they give glory to whom?
God.
They give glory, not to the man, to God. You see, gentlemen, you don't have the ability to do anything we've been talking about, do you? It's too much, wouldn't you agree? The things we're talking about will be done by the power of the Holy Spirit. And so as you succeed, you're just displaying whose presence in your life? You're just displaying the eternal God working in your life. Isn't that neat? You don't even take any credit. It's fantastic. You can't beat the system. You can enjoy the system. It's sweet. It's very, very sweet. And it gives me something valuable to work for my whole life. So that's who your wife is. She's your glory. Oh, just let her become somebody great. You can't lose. The better your wife becomes, the better she displays of you. Finally, then, in closing, let me just ask one thing. We live in a busy society. Would you agree? Life is busy. How many of you honestly feel, let's be honest, how many of you honestly feel quite often you just don't have time to spend on your wife and kids? Anybody want to confess to that? I do. Well, guess what? I'm going to tell you something very strange. You do not have time to spend on your wife and kids. Does that sound startling to you for me to say that? You don't. You have too many responsibilities. You really do. In providing for your children, providing for your home, and getting education and everything. How many would agree? There's just too many things you are responsible for. I'm going to provide. You do not have time to spend on your kids. Does that surprise you? But the problem is the word. What does spend mean? When you spend money, what happens to the money? It goes out with what coming back? Nothing. Gentlemen, you don't have time to spend on your wife and your kids. You honestly do not. What do you have time for? You have time to invest in your wife and kids. I'd propose you get rid of that word. Because you honestly really don't have time to spend. You are too busy. You have too many responsibilities. But I think you have time to invest. You have time to invest. You need to invest. Because you're looking for a what? Looking for a return. I've already told you. I've already shared with you. It's very important to me. When I get to be 60, 65, and 70, I want the telephone ringing. I want my children to love me. I'm ambitious to be beloved. I don't think that's a bad ambition, do you? I want my kids to love me with all their hearts. I'm not there yet, but I want it. To do that, I'm going to invest time in my children and my wife. I'm looking for a return, and I don't think it's a selfish return. Let me just close then by giving you an illustration of how you can invest time. Are you familiar with Howard Hendricks, of course? A well-known speaker with maybe 2,000 opportunities to speak per year, so he can't do them all. And he has to pick and choose. Well, one time he was scheduled to speak to 2,000 people at a dinner meeting. That's a lot of folk, you know? Well, the dinner time came for the dinner to be served, and no Howard Hendricks. Well, the organizers were kind of upset, but he said, go ahead and start the dinner. 2,000 people eating, and nobody up at the head table. Well, about halfway through the dinner, Howard Hendricks finally walked through the door. Well, the organizer walked over and said, wow, am I glad you're here. And Hendricks said, well, I called you this afternoon. I told you I'd be here, didn't I? I was in the city. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we're halfway through the dinner. I said, well, we got 20 minutes to go, don't we? Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, this is kind of scary. He said, well, I'm here. Well, okay. But what held you up? Something important came up. I had to take care of something very important. Oh, okay. What was so important that came up? That's kind of a pushy organizer. What came up so important? He said, just take my word for it. It was important, okay? Not this organizer. No. I want to know what it is. It could make you take a chance of missing speaking to 2,000 people. Howard Hendricks said, I don't want to tell you, if you don't mind. He said, I want you to tell me. He said, all right, I'll tell you. I had to fix a flat on my kid's bike. And the organizer said, you what? He was not too kind. I will not repeat what he said after that. But anyway, he had his piece, and finally Hendricks said, yeah, I'll tell you what happened if you want to know. Yeah, I'd like to know. He said, I was getting into the car. I was on time, no problem, dressed. And I was putting it into gear. Saw my kid, I was waving to my kid. Is he sitting there? And just then I looked ahead of me, and there in the driveway was his bike with a flat tire on the front tire. And I remember that morning I told him that I would fix his tire before I left that night. He said, I had a basic decision to make. He said, I made the decision. He said, I hope you can accept that, to the organizer. But he said, if you can't, that's tough. Wow. You see, it is tough because, you see, he made his decision. It doesn't matter what the world thought about it. Gentlemen, I think he made a wise decision. What had to happen to that little boy? When he saw his dad waving, and then all of a sudden saw his dad put the car back in park. saw the dad get out and take off his coat. Can you imagine the curiosity of the little boy? And then all of a sudden saw him go over and pick up his bike and disappear into the garage. What do you think happened to this little boy traipsing into the garage and saw his daddy with his sleeves rolled up, changing an tire? What had to happen in the boy's life, in his heart? What did he have to say about himself? Hey, I must be important. For his dad, in dress clothes, to fix his bike as he had promised. Could he have fixed the bike the next morning? He could have. However, what would that have done for his boy? One small little time of letting him down. Not worth it, gentlemen. He chose to invest. He took a risk. I think he took a wise risk. I propose that you think about that, investing your time. We've had a good time together, I believe. Our time has come to close now. I pray I'll mention one last thing. Have you heard a lot of things to do? Sure. I'm going to propose something to you, kind of surprising. Don't try to do them. Does that sound startling to you? Don't go out of here and try to apply all this stuff. Why? It's too much. Just go out and enjoy. Think, and guess what? God will move into your place, into your life, many places to apply it. Apply it as they come along. Do not look for times to apply it. You'll die. It's too much. Give yourself time. There's no hurry. There's no crisis. Oh, you may have a lot of things going on in your life, but you're not going to solve anything next week. It took us a lot of years to get into our problems. Let's take a lot of years to walk out, and we can walk out.